With the publication of her first book, The Secret History, Donna Tartt was acclaimed a literary phenom. 10 years later, her second novel, The Little Friend, has just been published, and critic Maureen Corrigan says Tartt is no one-hit wonder.
Apart from its many, many dazzling virtues, The Little Friend, Donna Tartt's long-awaited second book, has to be one of the most vexing novels ever written. After finishing it, I kept mulling over the last pages, and indeed Tartt's very integrity as a storyteller. Like legendary escape artist Harry Houdini, who's a guiding presence in this tale, Tartt, at the last possible moment, slips out of the narrative knots she's so elaborately tied throughout this novel. It's a breathtaking performance, but a heartless one. I say that because, as my late-night wrestling match with the story illustrates, while Tartt is slipping her own knots, she's simultaneously tying the distracted reader up in conundrums and frustrations, closing the covers of the novel and sinking it to the bottom of a muddy lake. One of the first bold moves that Tartt performs here is to whisk her readers far away from the elite New England academic world she made familiar in her amazing debut, The Secret History. If that novel was Tartt's homage to 19th century British Gothic writers like Mary Shelley and the Brontes, in The Little Friend, Tartt does Southern Gothic. The Little Friend is set in Alexandria, Mississippi in the early 1970s, where ghosts of plantations and the Civil War linger, and memories of more recent evils possess the present-day inhabitants. The book opens by dramatizing one such horror. On a chilly spring Mother's Day afternoon, a 9-year-old boy named Robin is playing outside with his two sisters, 4-year-old Allison and baby Harriet. His mother, who's occupied with a house full of relatives, feels a dreamlike flash of panic and rushes outside. At first, all seems in order. Then the mother sees her son hanging dead from the black tupelo tree in their front yard, his pet cat crouching on a branch above, playfully batting his hair. 12 years later, Robin's murder, for that's what it's deemed to be, remains unsolved. His mother and two sisters still live in the same house, supported by the attentions of a fairy tale matriarchy of 4 aged aunts. Tartt tells us that Allison, now 16, was the pretty one, though all her grace was in her vagueness. Tartt proceeds to introduce 12-year-old Harriet in 2 simple sentences that, in combination, are thrilling. Harriet, the baby, was neither pretty nor sweet. Harriet was smart. Those 2 sentences invoke a powerful literary lineage of wise girls, like Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird, and the juvenile versions of Kathy and Jo from Wuthering Heights and Little Women, respectively. A couple of grotesque events spur Harriet to actively consider the mystery of Robin's murder. She decides that a low-down schoolmate of his named Danny Ratliff was responsible, and with her best friend Healy, a boy, as her ally, she sets out to exact justice. What follows is a chilling expedition, not unlike that undertaken by one of Harriet's heroes, the doomed polar explorer Captain Scott. By the time her mission is over, Harriet, like Scott, will become viscerally acquainted with the white-out terror of nothingness. Such an ambitious literary adventure is bound to get stuck in a snowdrift or two. I could have done with about 75 pages less devoted to the Ratliff clan, who struck me as a flat reincarnation of Faulkner's Snopeses, and once was enough with them. Tartt's equally distasteful obsession here with nature red in tooth and claw, particularly with snakes, lots of slithering, slimy, sickening snakes, claims way too much of her descriptive powers. But oh, those descriptive powers. Tartt grants her characters the complexity of change and frailty, and she ferrets out the profundities lurking in the wispiest scraps of experience. About Robin's post-mortem influence on Harriet and Allison, she says, "His younger sisters, who had never in any proper sense known him at all, nonetheless grew up certain of their dead brother's favorite color, red, his favorite book, The Wind in the Willows, and his favorite character in it, Mr. Toad, and a thousand other things which they, being living children and preferring chocolate ice cream one week and peach the next, were not even sure they knew about themselves. Consequently, their relationship with their dead brother was of the most intimate sort, his strong, bright, immutable character shining changelessly against the vagueness and vacillation of their own characters. And they grew up believing this was due to some rare angelic incandescence of nature on Robin's part, and not at all to the fact that he was dead. With writing this great, no wonder readers like me will allow ourselves to get suckered in, cinched tight, and then left to struggle all on our own against Tart's inexorable finale.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The Little Friend by Donna Tartt.